American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Thursday, February 10th, 2005. This is Newsreel, your source for independent media and the news that will give you the edge against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you, if you and me too. So it's not just you. They're probably also trying to enslave not just you or me, probably them and their friends and everyone else. You can read along with me by going to my live journal, which is livejournal.Sean_Kennedy. livejournal.com/Sean_Kennedy, and you'll be able to find all the links that are there on my page, as well as whatever, you know, thoughts were running through my mind at that particular moment in time. You'll owe me time to change links when you hear me say something like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm still in New York. Got some feedback here to start off with. Hey, Sean and Sim, I enjoyed seeing the two of you speak at ACC, which is Adirondack Community College. Meeting both of you is definitely something I've always wanted to do. Hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in New York. And that's from Tenfold. And Tenfold was a guy, I think it was the little bit older fella who we met who was older than us. And it's always weird when we meet people who are older than us. When I don't mean a little bit older, that sounds bad. Sorry, Tenfold, I hope I didn't piss you off with that statement. But whenever we meet people that are older than us, that are fans of us, it seems kind of weird, you know, because we don't really know how to deal with that. It's very bizarre that we actually are seeing that we get fans from all walks of life. And it's really a very high compliment to get that. So, yeah, I just thought I'd spit that out. Because that's the only email I got, because I can't remember anybody else's name. So if you want to email me, I'd like to remember the online names of the people who were there, which would be cool. Another piece of feedback. Let's see. Dear Sean, I know you're in New York right now. Probably won't get this until you're back in Canada. But wanted to thank you for your advice you gave me on last Monday's show. I'll be on the lookout for the herbal supplements that you suggested, and I may even force myself to become enough of a morning person to get a regular morning run. If ever I slip, I'll have the show to listen to again to get my motivation back up. Thanks for withholding my names, because in hindsight, I probably should have done that to begin with. Here's hoping I learn to get a decent night's sleep, and wish you fun and a safe trip home from New York. Sincerely, name withheld again. So I wanted to relay, that's good that people are trying to get away from the pharmaceuticals. I enjoy the fact that people are realizing that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies will say everything is a sickness. They're saying that withdrawal from coffee is now considered a sickness that can be treatable with drugs. That's something that, and I've got some stories today that are just absolutely insane, some of the stories I got here. But first, a little bit more feedback. Hey, Sean. Raven Eye, which is a cool online name, and I burned 50 CDs and passed them out today. We went straight to Wally World, aka Walmart, and dropped a bunch in the parking lot on car windshields, then onto the electronics department. Ooh. So the CDs were CD extra format, so they'd be both CD audio tracks and MP3 available. Ooh, cool. In the electronics department, one of the employees found one and played it. I was incognito so I could watch his reaction, which I have to say were better than I had expected. It went something like this. 1. About an 18-year-old employee plays a CD. The first track is Sean K. Rant's Work Hard. Employee to himself, I'll call him Dan to protect the guilty. Holy shit, this is crazy! Dan goes to get fellow employees, again, say Greg and Charlie, who look about 18 and 19. Play the track again for Greg and Charlie. Charlie, wow, this is nuts. He's saying some crazy stuff. Didn't sound too good so far, mind you. This is Walmart on a busy knife on a shelf stereo system, so no matter what, this was loud, and I hadn't edited the swearing out. Greg says, well, wait, think about it. Laptops are supposed to make life easier. This guy is right on. My mom works all the time now. Emphasis was all him. Dan. You're right, dude. It's kind of cool because my dad came home, but he's still at the office all the time. Then to Target, and again, the electronics department. Now, there isn't much employee coverage, so I decided for a different approach. Turn the CD on via timer on the shelf system. That got some people's attention. Mind you, I didn't have it very loud, but it wouldn't play the same three tracks, three of your rants. Hang on, I think I screwed that up. That's some people's attention. Mind you, I didn't have it very loud, but it would play the same three tracks, three of your rants. I consider a known three people a success for an op like this. I am planning on... I am planning on doing... more of this than once, doing this more than once a month. Sorry, I'm screwing this up. On the success, I'm thinking maybe a smaller interval. I would love your thoughts. Anywho, I gotta go. I'll be all over the net looking for news tomorrow for you. Have fun in New York. Peace, PoliSci. What is my tape back? What is my feedback on that? What, you want to know what I think about that? I think that's fantastic. If we can, because that's what it's about. It's about getting through to people, especially young people, who are just going through into the, you know, the core political world, and maybe they want to try to hold on to their souls rather than selling everything out for the core political, you know, massive downslide. Also, as you can see, I am able to get my email. I've been able to reply because, you know, there's ISP problems. I don't know what's going on with my ISP. It's really crazy. But we'll be able to reply just as soon as I hit the ground, which by the time you're actually hearing this, I should be in the air flying somewhere over America or Canada towards my home destination to see my dog, which will be nice. Then we got a little bit more feedback here. Dearest Sean, which is nice because I like being called Dearest Sean. You know, dearest, lovable, oh, Sean, you lovely man, you. I have some questions about Ranger. Well, everyone has questions about Ranger. In an old episode of SKTFM, you said that you got your dog from the Duke of Place. In an episode of Patrolling, you said that you got Ranger from the Pound. So what happened to the other dog? The Pitbull Croc-Eater bloodlined one. I ate it. No, what happened there was that the guy I was buying that from started to look a little sketchy. I actually gave the guy about $150 down payment on the dog, and then he wanted to take the dog away from its mother, like, way too early, and he was doing all sorts of sketchy shit. So rather than getting a dog that I was unsure of, rather than putting up with a lot of crap from the owners and putting tolerating a lot of weird, sketchy shit, I just walked away from the whole deal and lost $150. It's not really... a great story because I was out $150. But, you know, you live and learn. You're always going to make sure that if you're buying a dog from a breeder, which really, in retrospect, I don't think I should have even went to a breeder in the first place. I mean, there's lots of dogs at the Pound. I usually find that mixed dogs are better dogs anyway, so you don't wind up with some, you know, weird wigged out puppy mill dog. Also, some scary shit, and it's all about dogs. This is a themed email. Maybe you noticed a friend of my uncle or my cousin was getting some homeowner's insurance. The insurance agents came in, looked around, everything was on the up and up. His dog was walking around and they seemed cool with the dog, who was a boxer. A week later, his insurance is canceled. Why? As it turns out, there is a list of dogs that the insurance companies see as red flags and makes them not give you insurance. Boxers are on there, pit bulls, Rottweilers, German Shepherds, etc. When I first heard your dog breeding rant at the end of Patrolling, I thought it was a little far-fetched. Surprise, it wasn't. Thought you might like to know. And that's from Red Maiden. So yeah, really really scary out there that they're deciding to bring about these laws based upon, you know, what dogs you have. I mean, that's just ludicrous. And yeah, there are some dogs that have had the brains bred out of them. Anyone will tell you that. But to be actually punishing people and not allowing homeowners insurance. Of course, insurance is the biggest scam ever. So, you know, it's not really that surprising that they would shut that down. But still, it seems deranged to me that there's so much, you know, stress going on over dogs. I don't really get it at all. Dear SKTFM, I realized it's difficult to read an undertone in an email, but you sound kind of bummed. Dude, I want you to know that my donation is bullshit. What? I don't care about your bills. I donate because during these last days and times, we need a real Canadian. I mean, a voice of freedom. I believe in you, Sean, and I hope you know there's more people out there who need your voice to gain a positive outlook on the future due to your hard work. I hope through my donation to achieve the opposite result of an intro you used when in the SKTFM show. I'm referring to one where your dad tells his child about a time when you spoke about when we had freedoms. I hope to be able to tell my daughter, who's 3.5, when she's 30, that Sean and I, yes, you and Sim, and a few thousand other people overturned the most powerful threats to ever exist, complacency and apathy. Sean, don't worry, even if you fail to cast... if you fail and are cast into the gaping mouth of the special interests, Ameri Nazis, corrupt political agents, the thought police, or even the Scientologists, the Wog Nation, or whatever, otherwise known as the rest of us, will carry on and fight and never surrender. There's not enough of them to kill us all. We will band together and crowd them out of our world. Sean, you don't need to do this rant thing, but you do, and that's why I donate. New hope for an old freedom fighter, and that's from Ad Hobbs. P.S. Please tell Smoking we know he's faking. That particular email really touched me. I was really pleased that there are people out there who are willing to carry on the fight. Because personally, I do think that there will come a time when they knock on my door. You know, I won't be able to keep doing Newsreel forever, no matter how much I want to. I'll either die of old age, or maybe I'll get arrested, or who knows. You know, things happen. But, I mean, I've made a commitment to you guys that I want to try to keep as much information flowing so we can keep communicating. I'd love it if, you know, there was some way that the WOGs and the Cyberpunks and the entire community, the Rant community, either through the forums or through communication lists or whatever. The problem with that, of course, is communicating in those ways is that it's very easy to track you, and then, you know, you can quickly find yourself on a database. So I encourage people to communicate via word of mouth, maybe having rant meets in your home cities, organizing it. Even if you're the only one who shows up for the first time, maybe the second time there'll be two people. By the fifth time, there's three people. By the 15th time, there's 10 people. And then gradually you gain momentum. Eventually, this isn't about, you know, me being, you know, the leader guy of some weird cult. This is about all of us taking responsibility for our own education, for our own lives, and for our future, so that we can keep our rights. I don't want anyone to get violent, but I do want people to stand up and take a stand and say, no, this is wrong, and I'm not going to be a party to that. And it's just, it really, I find it very heartening. So thank you, Ad Hops, for that email. That really makes me feel very, very good. On to the news. Yes, in fact, today, even though I'm still sitting on the floor of my hostel on, what's the address here, Sim? It's on the corner of Amsterdam and 103rd in Amsterdam in New York, so you can look that up on a map. I'm currently on the fourth floor of the hostel overlooking some weird little playground, which is weird because the kids here, they're like this concrete playground, and they get out at, like, I get up in the morning and I see them, you know, running around on recess, and all they do is run around on the concrete. They just run on the concrete. They're like birds, you know, birds fly in those weird circles, and then they stop, and then they fly around in a circle again. That's what these kids are doing. I think that's kind of sad because when I was a kid, I had a really cool adventure playground. And I feel bad for these city kids who, you know, don't have trees to climb or nothing like that. It kind of makes me feel a little sad. But I guess, you know, on the flip side, you know, when we were talking to everyone last night, they said that New York is really, especially Manhattan, is like this little temporal rift. And eating at the restaurants down here, I mean, seriously, you could move into Manhattan and never leave again. You just, you know, exist here forever. And, you know, that's a choice. That's a lifestyle. It's not my lifestyle, but it's cool. You know, why not? What the hell? So in the first news story today, was given to me by Sumerian, which is Rent-A-Narc. Now, this is some scary stuff. I'm sorry about this because it involves Canadians. A Canadian couple has launched a business offering worried parents or concerned employers private drug detection services that will search home offices for everything from marijuana to heroin. Russ Rathy of Pensy, Saskatchewan, started the home-based business Crusader Resources. Jeez, that's a great name. Along with his wife after buying a young German Shepherd trained to sniff out drugs. The dog, named Alice Vicona. Now, there's a name for a dog. What kind of a psycho names his dog Alice Vicona? It cost this guy $20,000 Canadian, or $16,000 U.S., and can detect drugs of the or the residue of drugs in buildings or on clothing even after 30 days. Incidentally, if any of those drugs ever smell, any of those dogs, rather, ever smell capsium or get a blast of capsium in the face, they can't be used as drug dogs anymore. If you suspect your kids of drug use, this is one way to make sure there are no drugs in the house. End quote. Russ Rathy, 39, told Reuters from his home near the Western Province's capital of Regina. Incidentally, that's where all the RCMP are trained. Quote, obviously, it gives you a little more leeway rather than waiting for them to become an addict and have to put them in rehabilitation or be picked up by the police. And now they have a criminal record and their future is pretty much shot with that. End quote. Yeah, absolutely. You know, because having a couple of joints kicking around is definitely the end of the fucking world. Once the dog detects drugs, Rathy said it's up to the client to decide what what the consequences should be. That's interesting. I wonder if that's even legal. Because, you see, if the guy, let's say this dog goes into a room and doesn't find, say, a couple of joints. Let's say he finds, like, say, a few keys of heroin. And Rathy knows there's two keys of heroin that is a totally illegal substance. It's trafficking. So if you don't report that, isn't that aiding and abetting? I'd like to check the law on that because it's like if you know about a murder and you don't say anything, I believe that's a crime. So if you know about drugs that exist, isn't that a crime? So he says that he leaves it up to the client, but I'd be a little bit leery of that. Whether they contact the police or flush it down the toilet, it's up to them, he said. We obviously make recommendations to call the authorities. Yeah, I don't think so. You know, and for that matter, why don't you just talk to your kids? Why don't you just, you know, try to build a little bit of trust with your kids. If you have to call in a drug-sniffing dog to go through your kids' stuff, you have bigger problems than your child doing drugs. You have major communication issues going on with your kids. This is a very disturbing issue that you'd need to call in drug dogs. You know, I mean, where's the trust there? How is your child ever supposed to, you know, how are you supposed to maintain a relationship with your child? Of course, nowadays, no one really wants to maintain relationships with their children. Now they just want to, you know, have these little, you know, leeches after, you know, 20-year sentence of having them, you know, having to look after them. They'll kick them out the door and that'll be it. And they're on their own. You know, the family unit's all but gone. And when you have to call in cop dogs to search your kid's stuff, you know, that tells a child that you don't trust them. As a matter of fact, it probably also tells a child that you fucking hate them. So, moving on. Although, while in Canada, they seem to be selling dogs and having people go into the house to, you know, detect for marijuana, it seems that in Israel, they're giving marijuana to their troops. The Israeli Defense Force will soon begin using cannabis to treat soldiers suffering from combat stress, the military said Wednesday. An army statement said the military medical corps of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem would be treating victims of post-traumatic stress, commonly known as shell shock, with THC, the active ingredient in the cannabis plant. I love how they call it cannabis when they don't want to call it marijuana. It is said the treatment would begin on an experimental basis. The use of THC as part of the treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder was approved by the military and civilian committees relevant to the subject, the statement said. Now, this is huge. This is huge. This is treatment of psychological conditions with a natural herb. Why isn't this more in the news? Because Pfizer definitely is not going to want to have this in the news. Neither is the makers, any of the massive drug companies are going to see this because, you know, it's something that can be naturally grown. The military can just grow it on their own. They don't need to have licensing or anything. It's fantastic. But no, we're never going to hear about that. An Israeli Defense Force spokesman said the treatment would be given to both conscript soldiers and reservists. So they'll give it to everyone. Hey, more weed for me. Since September 2000, the Israeli military has been conducting day-to-day operations against Palestinian terror infrastructure on the West Bank and on the Gaza Strip. During that time, many soldiers have been treated for combat stress following service at military checkpoints and in military operations. Now, the interesting thing is you know, they give a lot of credit to the military for the stress they experience in these operations. But they never really talk about the other stress that is experienced by day-to-day authorities. The Israeli Defense Force continues to ban the use of all drugs on a leisure basis, including cannabis derivatives, marijuana, and hashish. Cannabis derivatives, marijuana, and hashish. Okay, marijuana is not a derivative of cannabis. Marijuana is cannabis, and hashish is what happens when you take all the scrapings and scrape it down, and it usually becomes that black tarry stuff when they cut it with Vaseline. But anyway, the Israeli Defense Force has decided to start giving pot to their people. Now, what about the cops? You know, that's the funny thing, is if you go to these major inner city areas, you get cops, most cops have a nervous breakdown during their lifetime, and nobody seems to care about this. You know, war gets the big, you know, gets the big thumbs up. Everyone pays attention when there's bombs going off. But what about these cops who get up every single day, put their lives on the line every single day, wind up taking dead babies out of microwaves, wind up having junkies come at them in alleyways, wind up getting in gunfights, wind up having to deal with carjackers and all kinds of insanity? You know, no one ever thinks about them. You know, I think that it should be legal for cops to get pot too. You know, a lot of cops, the divorce rate amongst cops is very, very high. The divorce rate amongst military is just at least as high as it is for cops. So if that's the case, why not look at it and say, hey, you know what? We need to make sure that our law enforcement officials they should get what the treatment they need, because there is post-traumatic stress. Not only affects the military, it affects the police, it affects the emergency medical services, the paramedics, it affects a lot of these guys, you know? So we should follow Israel's example. The Israeli army is very, very advanced because they've been fighting for so long. So why don't we learn from experience? It doesn't have to be our experience, and see if we can chase that. Of course, you won't hear about it because of the next story, which is all the news that's fit to buy. The Pentagon's chief investigator is looking into the military's practice of paying journalists to write articles and commentaries for websites aimed at influencing public opinion in the Balkans, officials said Friday. Don't hate the media, become the media. And that's what the military does. At the request of Larry DeRita, chief spokesman for Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld, the Pentagon's Inspector General, Joseph Schmitz, Joseph Schmitz, is reviewing the case and is already looking more broadly at Pentagon activities that may involve inappropriate payments to journalists. Yeah, buy off the media. Derrida said he had no reason to believe any inappropriate activities had taken place, but wanted a comprehensive review to, quote, help ensure our processors are sufficiently sensitive to this matter. Now, you'd think that help ensure our processes, not processors, are sufficiently sensitive to this matter. Our processes are sufficient. What does that mean exactly? He stressed that the web projects are done in close coordination with the State Department. Oh, good, 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 good. So if everything's ignorant and false on the internet, I guess the Army's just wasting their time. Never mind vilification of the internet, which happens every day on all the other major news sources. The Balkans website, called Southeast European Times, as well as a second aimed at audiences in North Africa, have no immediate obvious connection to the U.S. government, but contain a linked disclaimer that says they are sponsored by European Command, which doesn't sound a lot like the U.S. government, does it? That is the military organization based in Germany, responsible for U.S. forces and military activities in Europe and parts of Africa. The second site, called Maghariba, and aimed at the Maghreb region that encompasses Algeria, Libya, Mauritania, Morocco, and Tanzania, is still in development and has not reached the stage of having paid correspondents, said Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Derek Kaufman, and a European Command spokesperson. Both sites carry news stories compiled from Associated Press, Reuters, and other news organizations. The Pentagon's role in these websites was first reported by CNN on Thursday. Now, isn't that just obvious that the propaganda machine is cranking it out? And if you don't think that you're a victim of propaganda, I encourage you to think again. There's a lot of stuff going on that we don't get to hear about. There's a whole jimmy whack of news that's not being reported on. If I hadn't told you that Israel was handing out weed to their troops to treat them for post-traumatic stress, would you have known about it? Of course not. Of course not, because of the war on drugs. We don't declare war on, you know, we'll declare war on everything. We declare war on drugs, war on litter, war on illiteracy, war, 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 war. We love the war. But it seems that Israel doesn't want to declare war on drugs. As a matter of fact, they want to use drugs to help in rehabilitating these poor soldiers, these kids, who have just, you know, completely been torn apart by, well, the very act of war. And if you don't think it's a war on the streets, you know, I don't know why they don't try to learn from this, but it seems that, you know, I guess the government knows best. And in knowing best, they've decided that there's no free speech in schools whatsoever. Now, this is kind of a crazy story. Everyone knows about the whole thing about hating Bush, you know, and the kid who got suspended for wearing a peace symbol and all that sort of lunacy. But how about this one here? You can kick some booty and you can shake your booty, but as 17-year-old Brad Devlin found out, you're not allowed to say you love booty. Now, last time I checked, booty is not a swear word. I'm not even really sure what booty is. Is booty ass? Is that what booty is? Is it like a slang term for something vulgar? I mean, booty, I would think it would be loot, you know, like pirates achieve booty, you know, when they, you know, steal a treasure and whatnot. That would be the booty. But anyway, during his daily sports report last week on Wild for News, the Estero High School junior and another student were recapping the girls' soccer team's 8-0 shutout win against North Fort Myers. The script, pre-approved by their TV production teacher, said that the team really kicked some booty. So they said they kicked booty, and that was pre-approved. Then Devlin, wanting to interject a little energy into this broadcast, responded with a quick-witted joke. I love booty, he said. I love booty. Ooh, obviously take him out and shoot him. Instead of a laugh, though, Devlin's statement got him called into the administrative office. He then got the boot from school, suspended for 5 days, and what Assistant Principal Howard Wendelin termed inappropriate comments on a live school television broadcast. Okay, so the team kicking booty is okay. So violence against booty is fine, but love against booty is not so fine. We want to have violence on booty, no love for booty. This is insanity. I mean, not only is this wrong, it's they're saying not only what you can say, but they're saying how you can say it. They're saying that you can say you can kick booty, but you can't love booty. I mean, that's so over the top. It's not even funny. Principal George Clover declined to comment on the suspension. Yeah, because you got no ground to stand on. The same punishment recommended if students bring a knife to school, start a fistfight, or join gang rituals on campus. Even if Devlin's statement was classified as a minor sexual harassment, it would have been a level one punishment under school district policy, resulting in a conference with administrators, school staff, and parents. I'm not at liberty to discuss student discipline, Clover said. We won't discuss anything except with parents. Nice. Nice cop-out, pal. Let me give you a little insight into what's going on here. What's going on here is that the principal, everyone pack your bags because he's going on a power trip, and he obviously doesn't like this particular Brad Devlin character. So he's going to take any chance he can to completely screw this kid over and make his life a living hell. That's, I mean, am I the only one who's willing to stand up and get on a microphone and say this is bullshit? You know, Dan, 60 Minutes, all you guys, why aren't you paying attention to this? Why won't you stand up and say, obviously, and these are our children. This is in the school system. If we don't stop this here, the kids are just, they're going to be afraid to say anything, do anything, walk anywhere, you know, even think for themselves. But even thinking for yourself, you know, that can be bad. We're going to get to the direction of where we are, of course, in Australia. The Aussie DNA database is just starting to come online. The case of a mentally ill woman who was locked up for 10 months showed the need for a national DNA database, a federal Liberal backbencher said. North Queensland Liberal MP Peter Lindsay told today repeated his call for DNA samples to be taken from all Australians and entered into a national database. This pays particular attention to Desert Runner because, you know, he's down there, and there's a lot of listeners we have in Australia, and they're talking about this DNA samples, guys. Don't do it. He first proposed the idea in 2001, but outraged civil liberties attacked the idea. So it's time to get outraged again and put this guy in his place. Furthermore, this guy should be voted out of office. Hey, psycho puppy, why don't you not try to put us all in a DNA database? Thanks. Mr. Lindsay said that Australian woman Cornelia Rao might never have been held at South Australia's Baxter Immigration Detention Center if authorities could have checked her details against a DNA database. Or if the authorities could have pulled their head out of their ass. I guess she was held against her will and nobody checked anything, so they just locked her up for 10 months even though she wasn't crazy. So the way to stop innocent people from being locked up in jail is, of course, to have a DNA database. This is their logic. Nice logic. Try again. I want the DNA database debate renewed in the light of Cornelia Rao incident, he said. Bullshit, Jack. You just want to make sure that we get everybody so you can lock them down good and hard and put the screws to them. Don't shit me. I want the many benefits of a national database again considered by the community and governments. The many benefits. The massive benefits. The huge, cascading, red, shiny, candy-like benefits of a national DNA database. Which would be what? Oh, the complete loss of personal freedom, perhaps? Is that a national database benefit? Could it be the fact that, you know, we got... And furthermore, how are you going to be getting this DNA? You're going to be walking around, you're going to get some pumps walking out and going to your house with needles and, you know, probably transmitting diseases and God knows what else. And furthermore, who's administering this database? Is there a private company, perhaps, that stands to make a lot of money, of which this... Obviously, this Mr. Lindsay is going to wind up getting a kickback from. I'd want to check into that. Who's the one who follow the money? Who's going to profit from this? Mr. Lindsay said such a database could have also been useful to identify the Australian victims of the Boxing Day tsunami disaster. Yeah, it could have. It could also have been used to completely remove any rights and freedoms from people who are ex-cons, people who want to start again, people who want privacy. It could be used for that, too. Currently, Australia only has a DNA database set up in Canberra to record details of convicted criminals. And that's interesting. I love how they say convicted criminals, because quite often the justice system in a lot of these countries is completely shot. And just because a bunch of idiots get together, decide to screw you over, one judge says, that's it, you're a criminal, your life is forevermore fucked. So you can't even with these national databases. There's only going to be a matter of time before, of course, it becomes international. And once one judge somewhere on the planet decides you're bad for life. Your future is permanently, well and truly fucked. There's absolutely nothing you can do, nowhere you can go to start again, nowhere you can go to start fresh, to turn a new leaf. And everyone will be able to just type in your name and get every little piece of dirt, whether it's true or not. Someone reports you as a pedophile because they hate you, because they want to fuck with your life, and that winds up getting on record. You get a few people who band together decide to destroy you, you're destroyed permanently. This is the terror that can come from these kind of matrix-style databases they want to set up. And you know that once they get them set up all over the world, they're going to link them. Mr. Lindsay said Australians should not be concerned about the security of such databases, saying they're just another form of medical record. Yeah, nice try. They're the very people who are complaining the loudest about what has unfortunately happened to Ms. Rao will likely be the ones most vocally opposed to my call, he said. This guy's just a brilliant, brilliant individual. Cyber liberties have nothing to fear. Yeah, you know what? Kiss my ass, pal. This is totally invasion of privacy, and I don't want to give up my DNA for a national database. Take a hike. It's my DNA. It's the only thing that really makes me who I am, because it is, in fact, my DNA. This is not Big Brother watching. Oh, no. This is a modern technology. It becomes available. We should embrace all the advantages it brings. Okay, this is when you want to ask, not the can we do this, but should we do this? And what about the disadvantages it brings? Because obviously civil libertarians will wig out. That's why it got voted down last time. The last time Mr. Lindsay called for the database in April of 2001, he wanted DNA samples to be taken from each child born in Australia and entered into the national system. Those wishing to enter Australia would also have to supply DNA samples under that proposal. So if you want to go to Australia, you got to roll up your arm and surrender a little bit of blood so they can track you no matter where you go. What an entirely sick idea. It's disgusting. I mean, granted, Australia has a pretty intense immigration policy, okay? Australia is the country where if there's refugees headed for the country and they're on like a rusty boat or something like that, if they don't turn that boat around, okay, they dispatch the SAS to go out there and sink the ship. Okay, they will take the ship by force, turn it around, or they'll scuttle the ship if it can't be turned around. It's not their responsibility. These people are very much xenophobes. Be it right, be it wrong, that's their policy. So, realistically, you know, if I was living in Australia, I think I'd be heading for the outback for a bit of a walkabout. Now, for those of you that don't happen to think it's really gotten that bad, well, this next story should be the nail in the coffin, or perhaps the nail in your butt to get you off of your butt and have you get active. It seems that we have death squads, American style. The film 7 Days in May is one of my all-time favorites. The gripping 1964 drama starring Burt Lancaster depicts an attempt of a coup by far-rightists in Washington using a top-secret Pentagon anti-terrorist unit called something like Contelinpro. Life imitates art. This week, former military intelligence analyst William Arkin revealed a hitherto unknown directive, the Orwellian name, the JCS Conplan 0397, authorizing the Pentagon to employ special, ultra-secret, quote, anti-terrorist, end quote, military units on American soil for what it claims are, quote, extra-legal missions. These are missions working outside the law. This is completely splinter cell kind of stuff here. It's like, we're beyond the law. We're beyond any kind of regulation. We're going to kill any terrorist, any person who's subversive, anyone who speaks out against the government. We can kill them legally in this country. In other words, the U.S. is using soldiers to kill or arrest American and acts that have been illegal since the Civil War in the United States. Now, I ask you, if we're allowing that the SS and the Gestapo by any other name is still the SS and the Gestapo. This frightening news comes as Washington is gripped by reborn Cold War style paranoia. Ominous threats of war against Iran from the real president, Dick Cheney, and titanic bureaucratic battle just won by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Donnie is one of my all-time favorite people. He's just, you know, this guy needs to be getting his head out of his ass in a big time way. Like, how much money and power do you really need, Don? You know, come on, man. Are you an American or what? Do you even value freedom? I mean, is it just for the super rich or is it for everyone? Instead of being fired for the grotesque military political fiasco in Iraq and the shameful torture scandals, Rumsfeld has just managed to create a new Pentagon spy/special ops organization, blandly named Strategic Support Branch, that will replace or duplicate many of the CIA's tasks. Now, I ask you, is that not Section 9 from Ghost in the Shell? I mean, really, this kind of an idea of having the Special Strategic Support Branch, or the SS, as I'll call them from now on, you know, if you've got the CIA to do this, why do you have a kill squad, dude? The CIA has been sent to the doghouse. Too many CIA veterans criticized or contradicted Bush's and Cheney's phony claims over Iraq and terrorism. So Bush has imposed a new yes-man director on the agency, slashed its budgets, purged its senior officers, and downgraded CIA to third-class status. The CIA is vital to America. Okay, it's good to have intelligence. We need to have an intelligence community, but it has to be an intelligence community. I understand that there's a certain amount of surveillance that goes on. I'm not really against the CIA. I understand that these things have to happen. I am against, you know, some sort of third world style masquerading military group that can just assassinate people and answers to, you know, Donnie Boy there. That's a little bit scary to me. Rumsfeld's new massively funded SS unit will become part of the Pentagon's CIA, complete with commando units, spies, mercenary forces, intelligence gathering, and analysts, and a direct line to the White House. The Pentagon has just effectively taken over the spy business. So why even have the CIA? You know? Maybe the CIA could do something about this. Maybe those of you in the CIA listening to my broadcast might want to get me some information somehow regarding this, and I'll out it. I don't care. I mean, this is bullshit. The fact that, I mean, I'm not really happy with anyone tapping my phone lines, but at least if it's a Central Intelligence Agency, they've got a bit of history there. I mean, the CIA is important. We have to have the CIA because we need to have intelligence to stop, you know, masquerading terrorism across, you know, the world. And there's always going to be assassination and things like that. I understand that. But to put together a whole new unit, Donnie's boys there, the SS, Gestapo, who only answer to him and can slaughter Americans, that's a little scary to me. Who's watching these guys? You know, is Georgie boy, King George II, is he watching this? No. You know, I think it's all just Donnie. And that's a little bit not so good. But hey, since we're already on the Nazi sort of roll here, why don't we just get all the way into human experimentation, which is the next story. Eyewitness News has uncovered a frightening information about Willowbrook State Institution, now closed institution on Staten Island. Secret medical testing that turned severely disabled patients into guinea pigs. Now, how Auschwitz is this? As if the indignity of living in filth and degradation wasn't enough for thousands of helpless people, we've now learned that the new details about the state-sanctioned medical experiments that took place at Willowbrook, a secret science, if you will, that still haunts many former residents. The graphic images are as gut-wrenching now as they were nearly 35 years ago when Eyewitness News first exposed the state scandal that became Willowbrook. An outraged staff doctor helped sneak a WABC reporter, Geraldo Rivera, into the institution on Staten Island, where thousands of severely disabled children and adults live in unspeakable squalor. You know, Geraldo really dropped the ball with the vaults thing. And, you know, I really feel bad for Geraldo sometimes because, I mean, the guy went from being an actual investigator reporter to like a daytime dude. Where is he now? You know, what's he doing? Anyway, Bernard Cabriello, then 21, would become the face and voice of the Willowbrook survivors. Today, Bernard is still an advocate for those who can't speak for themselves. Bernard Cabriello is quoted as saying, "It's so important because we don't want history to repeat itself. A history we've now learned involves secret scientific experiments on residents who were forced to drink milkshakes deliberately infected with live hepatitis virus, all in the name of research. It was the brainchild of Willowbrook doctor Saul Krugman, who died in 1995. Oh, that's too bad. The rationale that the conditions were so deplorable that the rationale of all this, check this out, now this is a fantastic rationale, is that the conditions were so deplorable, though the residents were likely to get hepatitis anyway, so why not give it to them in a controlled environment so we could learn from it? Ah, people not clear of the concept. Wasn't there an oath you took, doctor? That was the Hippocratic Oath, not the hypocritical oath, you piece of shit. Dr. David Rothman, quote, "They were human guinea pigs. There is no question about that." Now, this is what we know about today. So you want to ask yourself, what is the stuff we don't know about? What's happening to our convicts? You know, everyone hates the convicts. If they're a convicted criminal, okay, dude, wait a second. We've got a war on drugs. So, you know, these kids get busted with 12 joints. They wind up getting, you know, three strikes, you're out bullshit. And then they're locked away in jail forever. And suddenly they're convicted convicts. So who cares about them? How long before we take a page from China's books and start selling off their organs and shit like that? not just selling them to Dell to do slave labor to build computers that we can buy. You know, I mean, it's obviously turning into labor camps and not just prison system. They're convicted felons. They're criminals. They're not people anymore. They're convicted criminals with barcodes and RFID insertions and GPS locator chips. Curse them, those filthy, filthy criminals. Slavery has been abolished, except for, of course, the convicted felon. And let's not forget that public space is being copywritten. Following up, this is from a blog, but following up on my post discussing the uselessness of Frank Gehry's BP Bridge at Chicago's New Millennium Park, a story in today's printed version of Chicago Reader speaks to some other problems with the park. This time, the issues are not so much with the design, but with its use. Now, understand that the park has this really retarded big chrome bean in the middle of it. This is, you know, what art is becoming, these weird geometric shapes. And if you were to take it and I was to show it to you and it was, say, the size of a basketball, you'd be like, that's dumb. But if we blow it up to the size of a bus, then suddenly it's art. In keeping with the contemporary trends of privatizing public space, Millennium Park is copyrighted public space. The Reader recounts the experience of a photojournalist Warren Wimmer's attempts to photograph Anish Kapoor's sculpture Cloud Gate, more commonly known as The Bean. This is, if you ever look at this thing, I mean, okay, I'm not really into modern art myself because I think it's kind of dumb. But, you know, if you're going to make a sculpture, if you gave me the resources and the time to build a massive sculpture in the middle of the park, it sure wouldn't look like a large bean. When Wimmer set up his tripod camera to shoot the sculpture, well, good work, the security guards stopped him. Hey, what are you doing with the camera? I'm going to take a picture of the monument over there. It's only the size of a bus. Demanded they show him a permit. Wimmer protested, replying that it is absurd that someone needs to pay for a permit to photograph public art in a city-owned park. Ben Jorvansky, author of the Reader article, attempted to contact park officials for an explanation and received a response from Karen Ryan, press director for the park's project director. And it's quoted here as saying, "The copyrights for the enhancements of Millennium Park are owned by the artist who created them. As such, anyone reproducing the works, especially for commercial purposes, needs permission from the artist. I don't suppose the artist would care to consider that when they make a massive piece of art that is in the middle of a public place, people may, in fact, take photos of it." And that would be implied. You know, does that mean that we should have, you know, you can't really take photos of Mount Rushmore because that's, you know, you got to check with the artist on that. We can't go to the Coral Castle and take pictures of that. For that matter, should we get permission for France every time we take a photo of the Statue of Liberty? Don't feed me that shit. It's bull. Okay, just because it's in a public place, dude. And furthermore, who cares if they're taking pictures? As a matter of fact, since he's a photographer, are you saying that photographers aren't artists? Does that mean that any photograph I take isn't really art? I'm just repeating somebody else's art? So if I take a photo of anything, if I take a photo of a locker, this design, does I got to get permission from the locker company? Let's take a picture of a parking lot. I better contact Ford and Chrysler and all the cars in there because that's their designs, right? There's no way that can stand in court. I mean, this is so asinine, it hurts. Hence, the Millennium Park, a nascent destination for countless citizens and tourists that were built with $270 million of city funds, is slowly emerging as Chicago's most privatized public space. Photographers, beware. I mean, you know, what do you say to that? The stupidity in that. And the fact is that it's happening. It's happening now. We need to rise up against this. And, of course, no one's talking about this. Remember those large... there was a problem back in the 80s with these things. There were these bombs. There are these nuclear bombs that everyone said they were going to stop making because they were, you know, nuclear bombs and they were going to destroy the world. And even the dude from McNarma from The Fog of War was like, we need to get rid of the nukes because they'll destroy the world. You know, the guy who picked out the gravesite for JFK is like, whoa, we need to slow down with the nukes. Ultra conservative dude here. We need to slow down with the nukes because we almost destroyed ourselves. But no. In the United States, we're starting to make bigger and better nukes that are high speed and low drag. U.S. scientists have begun designing a new generation of nuclear arms, meant to be sturdier and more reliable and to have longer lives. Okay, last thing, what are you saying? The old nukes are unreliable? The New York Times reported this on Monday. The quiet effort so far involves only $9 million U.S. dollars for warhead designers. Like, wow, like who? Like Ralph Lauren? And the country's three nuclear weapons laboratories, Los Alamos, Livermore, and Sandia, where federal bomb experts were scrutinizing secret arms data gathered over half a century for clues about how to achieve new reliability goals. You know, what is it, buzzwords for nukes? The relatively small initial program involves fewer than 100 people, but is expected to grow and produce finished designs in the next 5 to 10 years, reports said, quoting federal officials, and private experts. Now, we need to stop this now. We don't need more nukes. Thanks for asking. The resulting warheads are lightweight, extremely powerful, and in some cases so small that a dozen could fit atop a slender missile, according to the report. Great. That's fantastic. So we have cluster munitions of nukes? Wonderful. Originally, the roughly 10,000 warheads in America arsenal had expected a lifetime about 15 years, officials were quoted as saying. The average age is now about 20 years, and some are much older. So what happens when we press the button? I heard a stat a while back that there was like a large percentage of those nukes were supposed to detonate in the silos. The U.S. Congress approved a small, largely unnoticed budget item in late November last year that stated the new design effort known as the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program. Reliable replacement, yeah, because we want our nukes to be reliable, because they're nukes. The design could eventually help recast nuclear arsenal with warheads that are more rugged and have a longer lifetime, experts said. Officials said that the program could help shrink the country's nuclear arsenal and at the high cost of its maintenance, but arms control advocates said the program was probably unneeded and dangerous, and it could start a new arms race if it revived underground testing. Now, I ask you this. If you're now putting 12 nukes per missile, how is that decreasing the nuclear arsenal? You're not actually decreasing the nuclear arsenal. You're, in fact, increasing it exponentially. And, of course, to end this all off, we've got a... Oh, no, it's not even the last story. I've got a fantastic story. Now, you know, I reported a while back about how coffee was, in fact, if you have caffeine withdrawal, that's now, you know, a sickness and you're not able to... You can get treatment for your caffeine withdrawal, okay, which is utter and complete bullshit. But now the medical industry, what's its latest thing they're going to make a pill for that they're going to force on you? Love sickness. What? Falling in love may be a great feeling, but the next time you feel lovesick, missing your sweetheart, rush straight to a doctor, and now the doctors have warned that the throes of passion should be seen as potentially fatal medical disorder. Love as a potentially fatal medical disorder. Psychologists say that love sickness is a genuine disease. Jesus. That needs more awareness and diagnosis. And those little actions that are normally seen as symptoms, like the first flush of love, like buying presents, waiting for a phone call, or making a bit of an effort before a date, may be actually signs of deep-rooted problems later to come. I'm not making this shit up. Frank Tallis, a clinical psychologist in London who needs to get out more, examined the historic attitudes of love as a mental illness stretching back to the times of ancient Greeks, is found that before the 18th century, love sickness had for thousands of years been accepted and recognized ailment. But for the last 200 years, it has been out of favor with medical practitioners as a proper diagnosis. Now, I used to make a joke that love was an obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, like if I had a spoon and I would phone my spoon and my spoon didn't say anything, but I sat on the phone and just knowing my spoon was there and I'd show people pictures of my spoon, you know, that's obviously obsessed. But when you make it a person, suddenly it's love and it's okay. Now, I'm joking when I say that because love is one of the most powerful things in the world. It's something that two people share. It's probably, if I was gonna step into the octagon to prove what is important in life and what is the essence of being alive, I'd probably take out love and put that in the middle of the octagon and come what may. But according to The Independent, in a report in the Psychologist magazine, Tallis has suggested the effects of being lovesick could be described in the latest diagnostic term with its symptoms including mania, such as elevated mood, inflated self-esteem, or depression, revealing itself as tearfulness and insomnia. Aspects of obsessive-compulsive disorder can also be found in these love-sickness ideas. Now, they're not calling it love. They're calling it love-sickness. Okay, being love-sick means you miss someone you care about. And currently, I miss my wife because I'm in New York, so I guess I should get some pills, too, so I don't love my wife anymore, such as a preoccupation and obsessively checking for text messages and email. Let me tell you, okay, Enki and Quoth need more medication by this report than any two people I've ever met in my life. The average clinical psychologist will not receive referral letters from GPs and psychiatrists mentioning love-sickness. However, careful examination of the sanitized language will reveal that love sickness may be the underlying problem. Oh, you're in love. We can get rid of that. Many people are referred to for help who cannot cope with the intensity of love. We've been destabilized by falling in love and who suffer on account of their love being unrequited. This is what this idiot said in his paper. And all this can lead a person to commit suicide. Yeah. You know, the day that they make being in love illegal, I mean, think of that for just a moment, where they're saying that love is actually a sickness. And this piece of shit in England is calling that. What is the point of being alive if you cannot feel love? What is the point of even existing without that? I mean, I don't mean to get all gushy on everyone here. Okay, and I don't know what the answers are regarding, you know, gay marriage and adoption of children and all these different issues that are swarming through the news right now. But, I mean, where do you draw the line? If they can say that love is a disease, you know, is what's next? Individual choice? This is disturbing and deranged. We have to stop this. We need to get a hold of this guy and set him straight, because this is crap. There's no way they should be able to medicate us because of love. You know, if my love for my wife is some kind of disease, I hope it kills me, because I'd never want to lose that. And of course, to help you combat the daily sickness of, you know, love and life and joy and all these weird emotions that people feel. And, you know, and what about love for your parents then? What about the pain of depression from your parents dying? Why don't we just medicate ourselves into a coma? We'll just turn ourselves into drug droids. Wouldn't that just be handy? So to combat that, today's daily hack is how to disappear in the United States of America. And yes, it is still possible for you to fade out. And there are many good reasons to want to disappear from society. There are many bad reasons to want to do it too. There are many good ways to disappear from society, and there are many bad ways to disappear. And what the guy says here is, while I won't want to delve too deeply into the whys of disappearing, I will cover my opinions on how to disappear successfully. You can get off that off my LiveJournal page. Click on that. And for those of you out there who want to, you know, be in love and have a family and maybe make some art and be creative and all that kind of stuff, maybe you should figure out how to get out of there, move to some place, live in a trailer, and have some sort of peace before they medicate you and lock you in jail and take your family away from you so that they can enslave you in the core political prison state. This is disturbing that we're taking this trend. But luckily, you know, I'm able to report these actions to you. That's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast. You're free to distribute this any way you see fit, especially when you want to copy it and give it to kids at Wally World, because they have the right to be in love too. And it's made possible by the incredibly generous donations of Jesse Anonymous and Anonymous, Jesse again, The Gray Ghost, Robert, Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, Weblife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystique, who I met just the other day, thank you so much, Mark, Jonathan, who I also met, who was just a prince, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Darmude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. Now, if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air for as long as we can, please, as soon as you can, visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Special thanks to some hard net runners who came across these stories and got them to me so I could get them to you. Punk of Evil, Transix, Sergeant Tibbs, Sylvanus, Valakai, Astrofix, Ricky Rocket, Insane Blade, No Delete, Foulweir, Syntax, Barbed Wireless, and Sideslide. And Sideslide's been around for a long time. Good to hear from him again. And thank you for all of your assistance, guys, for gathering this data. It makes my life a lot easier. Now, if you have access to information and other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to check out the album Space Monkey. It's a 2004 album by the group Psychotic Episode, which I figured, you know, that's kind of very appropriate for today's Newsreel. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.